From high above First Street South in presentable Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
In this episode, Peter Yang is here to talk about pitching to board game publishers and to help your nice hosts with the same. Also, Dale is here. So if everyone is ready, let's start. Booyah.
Who wrote the intro? Dale, did you write the intro?
What?
Because you're like, also Dale's here. That.
Yeah, I put that in there.
Well, it should be bigger.
Steven, you missed the meeting where we decided to not hide the fact that Dale is here.
No, I'm not trying to hide. I want emphasis.
Yeah. We agreed that we like Dale and we want her to be here. We want listeners to know.
Yes.
Not previously as you suggested, which is to never invite her on the show and reveal that she's here.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
Let me try it a couple times and we can cut it back in.
Uh-huh.
And also Dale is here. And also Dale is here. And also Dale is here.
So we have Peter here, and Peter, we'll get to you in a second.
No rush.
And also Peter's here.
Why are there five people in the clubhouse today?
That's a good question.
How do we even fit? That's the better question.
We have been working on Glom because we love that game a lot, and it's
got the juice.
It's got the that's a good way to present it. Got the juice. So we've been doing that, and we're like getting to a point where we're actually starting to, you want to like pitch it to publishers.
Well, let me stop you right there.
Oh,
for listeners who might have missed the episode.
Yeah.
What
is Glom?
Oh yeah, that's fair. Dale, you want to present it? You've been practicing.
Okay. Glom is a rewording romp of regular remarks. It's a party game that plays with words, and it's very easy to teach and play.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's accurate.
They invented it during a game jam episode, which you can link to in the show notes.
Right.
Yes.
We did all this prep for this episode, but I forgot to know what episode number was that?
Oh gosh.
One of those numbers, you know.
I'm going to search it really quick. You can go to the website.
That's true.
And you can search for Glom, and it'll
come
up.
Yeah, actually, that would work. That would work.
Yeah. But yeah, we did. So listeners who followed us through our winter hiatus know we did spend a ton of time on Roboston, a game we came up with just before hiatus. And
yes.
I mean, I still love that game. I still think that game has a future.
Yeah.
But we got a little burned out on it. And then we were all like, okay, no more nice games jams after we spent all hiatus working on that game. But then I think we had like either a guest fall through or we like there was a topic we didn't fully research and didn't want to do. And so we're like, all right, let's just do a game jam episode. It's not gonna be our best work. But you know what? You can't win them all.
Yep.
And we came up with Glom within like a third of the episode. It was like finished.
Yeah.
And it is like probably the best game we've ever made here on the show. Just in terms of it, like its completeness and its, I mean, this is just my opinion now, but I feel like it expresses a lot of like what we all are as designers. And we were sort of firing on all cylinders when we put it together and it just came out fully baked. And not that there isn't still tweaking to do. Dale has been an enormous help getting it in shape, adding content to the game, which is what it lacked initially. And so the four of us now have this game that we want to do something with. And in steps Peter.
Hi.
I was also going to say, you've done a lot of games on game jams. Perhaps you would like to give it a nice games jam award.
Oh, we start awarding our games.
Yeah, yeah, we'll rank them. Yeah.
That would have to be a listener. Yeah.
That's like ranking your children.
Is Glom your
Which
favorite?
We do.
Yeah.
Do that.
Which,
it's episode 210. You can listen to this happy accident take place on episode 210.
Oh, is that how you would address your children?
Happy accidents?
Or you are child number one. You are child number two.
I mean, sometimes you can't hide it. It's like, well, you're 10 years younger than the rest of your siblings because you were the result of a podcast episode.
Wow. Well, okay. So before Peter enters the story, just Ellen and Steven, like, is my telling of that, does that sound
about
right?
No, that's accurate. I just wouldn't necessarily say that Glom is the best game we've ever made.
Oh, no.
That's all.
What would you say?
I don't know which one would be the best. Yeah, that's kind of it. But
I'm
like,
just trying to get awards to our game.
Oh.
Because that's helpful in pitching.
That's true. It goes on the box, and that helps it.
Doesn't count if we give the award to ourselves.
We'll look into that to make sure.
This is the glommiest game that we've ever made.
Yes.
What say you, Ellen?
I love glom.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't know. It's simple. It's got I feel like a really elegant rule set, but just ridiculous results. I don't know. It's fun to play. I think that's the biggest thing is I don't really care about the scoring. I just like seeing what people come up with.
Yeah.
Until I care about the scoring. If I'm winning, I generally care. or if I'm playing against Lane. Sorry, Lane. Sorry, not sorry, Lane.
Yeah.
But only because Lane has a great sense of vocabulary. So I always feel like he kind of pushes my English degree back into high gear.
And that's the thing about glom that we haven't gotten into the details. It is a word game. It's a party game. And this episode is going to be devoted to us talking a little bit about getting in final tip-top shape to be able to pitch it to board game publishers, which is something the three of us on the show don't have really any experience with. But our guest, Peter Yang, does.
Yeah, I guess I've been doing this for about 3 years now, which is a really weird thing to say out loud and in front of an audience. Because looking back at when I first started, I was just kind of just doing it for the fun. Like, I've always wanted to do game design, and I can't program or code at all, unfortunately. So I was like, what's the next natural step? It's just board games. You just say the rules and everyone follows them. Great.
Yeah, that's true.
So when that journey first started, I attended a Protospiel in Minnesota, which is a very big board game kind of event for like all across the world and nation. It's like a big Protospiel that happens in multiple states. But we had Protospiel in Minnesota in January. And this was like right after December where I attended my first online video game jam. And right into that swung into Protospiel. And I just started dedicating my life, finally making steps for making that happen.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's exciting. Oh, man, that must have felt so nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it was insane. My only recommendation to anyone who wants to do this in their time is to start now, because I wish I'd started now earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we all feel a little bit of that. It's like as soon as you start, you dabble, you try it, and then like it ramps up at some point.
Yeah.
And you look back years later and you're like, it could have happened earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's probably true for a lot of us. Yeah.
Yep. But I think... ever since that time, I think my repertoire is like I try and sign one game a year, which I've been hitting the past 3 years, which has been really successful, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people who work on like pitching a game like rarely get that signature, get that contract. And I've been very fortunate to find as an agent, I kind of find developers that are small, first time, or people who are like a little bit on the shy side who just don't want to take their games out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, I think this is great. Let me take it for you. And that's how the partnership kind of worked out. And then over the few years, I've been slowly building a small clientele.
Yeah.
So, but I'm still the weird person that does, like, I attend all like the IGDA, the video game at the events, and I'm the board game guy. That's just who I am.
You've got your niche.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you here.
Oh, yeah. Happy to be here.
Because that describes us as we're indie. We didn't set out to make a board game. It just kind of happened, and we don't have experience pitching board games at all.
Yeah, and I think a lot of our knowledge as professional digital game designers, it transfers, but not as much as maybe we hoped when we started looking into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think so, Peter, because I think we value your opinion on board games, we just wanted you to play Glom.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're busy, but you did see something in it, and you're helping us out to get it in front of people.
Yeah, I'd say you invited me over on a Saturday. I played it once, and I was like, this game's got the sauce.
Yes!
I was like, this is a good party game. And I trust my initial gut. And I was like, and so we started talking that same day. And my initial thought was like, how do I market this? How do I pitch this? That's my immediate thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought it up to a friend who I also pitched it to. And they were like, if I wasn't already swamped in party games, I would sign this right now and order 100,000 copies.
Oh, printed. My goodness.
Oh, dang. I didn't know the second half.
Yeah, you didn't share the second half.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got really...
And I was like, whoa, like, thank you for such a compliment. But then so they recommended, like, hey, you should pitch this to like the higher ups, like CEG and Hasbro, which is what we'll talk about later in the half of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking some water.
Yeah.
Ellen needs to hydrate. So I think, it was really obvious to us that Glom is special, that it could go somewhere. But I don't think we really had the ambitions that you immediately saw for it. Mm-hmm. And so that really helps us because it, like we trust your judgment and like your expertise to like know this sector in a way that we would just be fumbling through, which means that we wouldn't know who to pitch it to. And maybe we could get a meeting. Maybe we could even get a contract. But like, would it be the best thing for us in as for our careers? Because we don't want to, like, we're not board game designers and we're not going to become board game designers forever.
Right.
Yeah.
But we do. We wanted this game to be treated right. And
I would say that your guys' ambitions was let's wake Dale up from her nap.
That's where it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal, you guys. But yeah,
it's true.
But yeah.
And Peter's ambitions are let's pitch this to the big publishers.
Yeah, let's get this a home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something this fun and this, like, I don't know, this easy to play and enjoyable is something that I feel like should just exist in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about it like a little bit earlier, just like, do we kickstart this? And we're like, no, that's just too much work. And like, I totally respect that.
Right. Yeah. That's a case where like we would hire someone to run a Kickstarter campaign. We would probably have no hand in doing it. We just, it's not within our, I mean, we could learn to do it, but we're not going to.
Yeah,
like, it's sort of very, even if it was the best option for this game, we couldn't commit to that.
Yeah. No, no, I wouldn't feel like we could do it justice, but you can do it justice, Peter.
We'll find out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, I mean, we're all very high on this game and we really believe in it.
Yeah.
And we think we have a lot of confidence in it and we'll see, you know, if that bears out. We're talking about it on the show because we want to, as we've always done, and as the Nice Games Jams are really about, is opening up this process. And because the three of us don't have the expertise in this process, Peter's here to provide that window into this step and us to be little Padawans to sort of, you know, like, what is the plan? And so we're going to do some brainstorming. And I don't really know where we're going to start.
Okay, so Peter, why don't you start by telling us, let's say a listener has a board game idea and it's pretty well developed and they played it with their friends. What are the things they need to pitch it to publishers?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you to play this game with not friends and take it to public events. That's my first thing is that, of course, whenever you play a game with your friends and your family, they're gonna be like, oh, this is fun. This is like, I like this part, I like that part. They're not going to tell you what they don't like.
Except for me and Eric.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Those, you're the good kind of friend that they can.
Yeah, not everyone has straight talking Dale to help them out.
Straight talking Dale is how we will introduce you from now on.
Your game is too hard.
I've heard that one a lot.
Yeah. Okay. We'll link the YouTube to the playtest event in the Twin Cities, and you can listen to me tell everybody their game is too hard because I do it a lot. Part of that's because I'm not great at video games. But,
yeah, but that's good feedback, though. Like, taking it to a prototype is going to give you so much more, I guess, like, so much more feedback on, is this actually the kind of experience you want people to feel? Is this the kind of game mechanically that's in, like, the right audience? Like, is this, like, even though you want it to be, like, a entry-level game, are the mechanics too hard for an entry-level player?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I will say that I've been to a mini Protospiel because Protospiel sells out.
Yes.
So, like, pay attention and get your tickets. But, like, mini Protospiel was just an event, you know, a couple years ago at a local game store.
Yep.
And I got really good feedback, and I played some games that were pretty, you know, some of them were really far in development, and they were good. And I was able to tell them, straight talking Dale. So it is really helpful.
Yeah. Is that something that has been, is that kind of that space been disrupted by COVID?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
The good news is that we have wonderful things like Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. Which has been a huge boon for like online playtesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dale learned how to use Tabletop Simulator to test out ReRaffle, which is another one of our next games jams. And I learned how to use it to get Robostin up in it. And so by the time we needed to test Glom, you know, with strangers, the path had been paved from previous experiments. So even if you don't have something ready now, I would say Tabletop Simulator or there are equivalent software options. Figure this out now because it will help you later. It's a tool worth knowing.
And I will link my notes on how to get things into Tabletop Simulator in the link.
Incredibly useful.
Yeah, along with probably one guy's excellent video.
That's still a resource, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like YouTube really helped me out in developing my thing. We happen to be kind of an Adobe family, so I needed more specific instructions for using Photoshop with that. But yeah, really helpful. And as long as we're on the topic, Tabletop Simulator, it's a game you buy and download, but there is a 4-pack. And that's essentially buy 3 passes, get the 4th one free. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to be playing online with friends, that's a really good way to do it. Yeah. And like, think about that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Will me and my friends be buying at least 3 copies? Then just get the 4-pack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get the 4-pack once you've bought it already.
Yes.
Oh.
That's how Steam works.
That's how Steam works.
That's and you know that actually, that's just an example of like all the little things. When you think like, I'm going to make a board game and test it and pitch it, there's all these little things you need to know along the way, just the various workflows and stuff that like, you know, as someone who's been doing development for a long time and, you know, media, I feel like it's not hard for me to learn something, but like I was flummoxed by how much I had to figure out to be able to get the, you know, the Robossin in this case, to the next step of it. And I was like, okay, so it humbled me a little bit to be like, all right, I'll sit back and I'll just watch these tutorials. I'll figure this out. And I'm using none of my familiar tools or not many of them or whatever.
Yeah.
But 100% worth it.
Okay. So Peter, what are other online tools?
Yeah. I was actually typing on my computer. obviously there's Tabletopia, which is the most immediate comparison to Tabletop Simulator. Tabletopia is free, and the amount of stuff that they allow you to do for free is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be as polished as Tabletop Simulator in terms of like assets and like importing and things like that, but for the price of free and its functionality, it's incredible.
I was quite impressed. You tested a game with us using Tabletopia, and I'd never used it before.
Yeah,
really easy to use. Maybe it's not as polished, but it's pretty polished.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'd recommend giving that a go if that's an issue.
Yeah, on top of it being like it's browser based, you just sign up for an account. Yeah. Boom. Mm-hmm. You just pop in and
that's
play.
Cool.
Send a link. You share a link for a test. It's good. The workflow is that Tabletop Simulator is a little jankier in that way in exchange for the power it gives you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's easier to share with different people because I know, you know, I have a thing on Tabletop Simulator, and to find it, because I didn't make it publicly available, I just made it available to my friends. Mm. Even if you're my friend, it's very hard to find. I should put my notes in there too for how to tell your friends to get to your game.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say those are the two like leading things that people use for prototyping, I think.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And independent of COVID, like, you know, once the pandemic is truly finally behind us, fingers crossed, these are still good tools to keep in your toolbox because, you know, to test not just with strangers, but with people from other places, from other communities. And, you know, it's easier to find people when the pool of people is much larger.
It's the internet. Yeah.
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 And I think that the other, like leading into the next part, because you said a question originally being, what is the first thing you do is that you test it with your friends and such and that, but you bring it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You can both do this both online and in person. But after that point, like you just, I think my biggest feedback I can give to designers is be open-minded.
Mm.
And that's like be open-minded to feedback.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure everyone here that's like designed a game, it's your baby. It's like your child and like you're very proud of it. But when you test it up to the public, that's up for debate.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't care how hard you thought about that rule.
Yeah, no. It's just like, this doesn't feel right. And I'm like, okay, like why? He's like, I don't know. I just don't like it. That's some straight, honest talking Dale, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's an aspect of it too. Like sometimes it's with board games, it's difficult, and games in general, it's difficult to know when somebody's giving you feedback, what that feedback means.
Oh yeah, that's a whole other episode, I feel.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think we've talked about that plenty.
Yeah, that's come out so often in the show, but like I don't think we've scratched the surface of mm-hmm. that topic. It's so important for designers to internalize that, like, that get feedback, yeah, but like that's just the first step of a really arduous journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the next step is like it's probably working on your teach. I see like how you teach a game and how you present it. That's not something you really have to do you do that for a video game to a degree, but the rules are all dead set and that a player generally can't break those rules.
Yeah.
But when you're teaching a board game, you're teaching like how everything functions, what are the rules, what things you can and can't do. That's a whole like pitch in itself. That's a whole speech. And that takes like 10-15 minutes. And that's a for a longer game.
Like, yeah, for a more complicated game that can be very long.
Yeah.
The phase of your turn, the second phase of
exactly.
your turn.
Exactly.
Right.
Who goes next? Yeah.
The thing when we were writing rules for Roboston and even writing show notes for the Nice Games Jams, the thing I'm always worried about is like terminology, and there's like a technical writing aspect to it, but also it's like half poetry. Like, you know what I mean? It has to, it's not a VCR manual. It 100%. Has to be something that reads, that feels linear. So like the order in which you teach somebody, it's not a reference guide, even though it becomes a reference guide later. Mm-hmm. It's an enormous challenge to write a rule book for a board game.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's an instructional design challenge.
Yeah, that's something.
Ellen's eyes are lighting up. Ellen, you are going to be writing the rule book for GLOM.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you volunteered for
that. I think I just did.
But the teacher is actually a very important part. And I think that's one of the things that I really like about GLOM is that I can like do it in like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like here's three cards. You want to say this thing, follow these rules, otherwise you lose, and try and do this to get the most points to win the round. First person to three winning GLOMs wins. Done.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Like that was like 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very contextual. Like, even if you don't know I don't know what you mean by that. And then when the game starts, oh, I know what you meant by that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is the opposite of what happens with a lot of board games, which is like, I fully internalized your instructions. I don't know how to apply them.
Yeah.
GLOM, we're lucky in the sense that GLOM is easy to teach and take advantage.
And that's why, like, as far as a party game goes, like, that's what makes it really shine. Is that, like, teaching, Cards Against Humanity. Like, that's a game everyone knows how to play. But, like, have you tried teaching that to a player who hasn't played it recently?
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
A little bit of an effort, right?
Yeah. But like that, you can still break that down into like a quick 10-second game explanation, which is still a very good sign of a party game, is that you can just sit down, play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say, next up, after you want to take it up to people and play it, you want to like practice your teach. Get a little script, not necessarily like a full word-for-word thing, but
know what you say.
Yeah.
It's like the player elevator pitch.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
This is what you're going to be doing.
Which, that's a perfect segue, Dale. Thank you very much. Because, like, once you get to the whole teaching thing, when you are very interested in pitching to a publisher, you do need that elevator pitch, that two-minute pitch. Mm-hmm. And it has to have, it doesn't need a byline, but I really like the idea of gravitating to, like, a game needs a byline. That's, like, this one sentence that just ties it all together.
Yeah. And you mean a B-U-Y line, not a B-Y line.
Correct, yes. But like I like Dale's looking at the sales sheet again. It's a romp of rewording regular remarks. Like it's quirky enough. Like tell me more. Yeah. That's exactly what a byline needs to do.
Yeah.
Why are there so many R's?
Yeah. I know. Like exactly. Like why is there so many R's? There must be a reason. And the reason you premise this is like this is a party game, and you say it's a romp of rewording regular remarks, and then the publisher's gonna be like, okay, fine, tell me more.
Well, what's fun about it is that because the game is about taking a sentence and come up with a new way to say it, we actually can have a rule and a goal in mind for how someone would have come up with that particular slogan, mm-hmm. which on the sell sheet we can actually show how that slogan was created.
Yes.
Which you don't have to go that far when you're being told what GLOM is.
No.
But it gives it some depth, which I think is fun.
Yep. And I we'll get to shell sheets, but I will say that I've drafted this 3 times now, and my first draft did not have that. And that came as a suggestion from Steven.
Ah, that's great.
So Peter, do you need this thing I kept mentioning called a sell sheet?
Yeah, a sell sheet. That's a really good thing to bring whenever you're when you're going to like the next step. So after you've taken it and you play tested it, you get more feedback and you get like a feel like, oh, people really like this. And it's getting positive reviews at showings. Perfect. You get your pitch, your 2-minute pitch lined up, and basically talks about the game. You practice how you explain the game, because that teach is very important. So you can now take it to the next step, to where you get a sales sheet and you go to the scary part of maybe like reaching out to publishers at a convention, cold calling, sending emails, DMing and Twitter, like all that. This next step is
that's why we have Peter.
Yeah, this is a weird step. Yeah.
That sounds really daunting, but I'm really relaxed about it for some reason.
Yeah, it's like someone else is taking care of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is where the sales sheet really comes into play, because this is the first physical aspect of your representation of your game. Mm-hmm. And this is something you hand off to somebody. And just like a resume or like when you're going for an interview, like you only get 2 minutes for that interview. Imagine that being the goal.
I would definitely call this a game resume,
yeah,
because you have to be that tight with your wording and your formatting
to sell your game.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating how different that is board games are from video games in that way, because like the pitch is normally like a PowerPoint presentation and you like detail all of the different things like the art design and the narrative and all of these things, how you play the game in this presentation, and you like present that to publishers. But in a board game, they take this sell sheet. The sell sheet's not good enough. They don't look at you again. Kinda.
Okay. but like they also grade it on who you are too and how you present it. So sure. If your pitch is excellent and your sell sheet's blah, that middles out. And they'll be like, okay, tell us, like, send us an email or so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But if your pitch is great and your sell sheets are great, they're gonna be like, can I grab a prototype? And then that's a really good sign when they want to play it themselves.
Yeah.
But one of the things that tripped me up a lot when we started talking about this, about putting together sell sheets, is how different things that a board game publisher wants versus what a video game publisher wants. One of the things that is, and dear listener, you may have heard this about video game publishers, is that they're interested in your game, they want to hear about it, but they also want to hear about you, the developer story. Because when you pitch a video game, you're pitching, if you got a prototype, that you still got 2 years left to work.
Yeah.
and the publisher is going to fund that work.
Yeah.
And so they need to know about you and are you able to hire the contractors you need? Is the scope that you're outlining something that you can execute on? The thing that really threw me, and it makes a lot of sense, but I didn't grasp it at first, was that board game publishers don't care about that to the same degree anyway.
Yeah.
Because for two reasons. One is that they don't really, they're not in the business of funding development generally.
Yeah.
And secondly, a lot of times board game publishers do development in-house in a way that video game publishers don't. And those, you know, the details of that is arranged. But so a publisher isn't necessarily worried if you can execute. Mm. If you've got a great idea and you've got enough, a promise and your pitch is great, they don't care as much. And that was something that was very difficult to wrap my mind around, because that I've been gearing my how I present my work that way for years now, to like, how do I prove myself as someone you can work with? And that's not quite the same thing.
Yeah. I would say that, of course, being personable and like having them like you is very important.
Yes.
Because if you have the next Catan, but you're just a jerk and like you don't communicate, like they send you an email and you don't respond for like a week.
Yeah.
That they're still probably not going to work with you because of those kind of reasons.
Right, right. I don't mean to imply that there's, you know, that the general standards of collaboration don't apply.
Yeah,
right.
But in video games, the threshold is incredibly high for that kind of thing. It's more important than your prototype in a lot of ways.
Huh.
It depends on the publisher, I guess. So that was a little something to get used to.
For me. Yeah, and I would say that it's also true for like the board game world. A lot of publishers will actively take. As soon as you sign the contract, they will. And this is something that also, like, as like a preface for people who want to like get their game signed and get them published, you have to kind of be okay with letting that IP go, because a lot of publishers are going to want to take ownership of the game,
right?
Because they're the ones fronting all the money, production costs, art, development,
right?
Yeah,
that's much more overhead to produce a board game.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And not even to mention, like, at this time, August of 2021, it is like $20,000 to ship a container from China to the United States. So like that's outrageous amount of money to, like, if you produce it somewhere and you have to bring it overseas.
Yeah.
That's an overhead cost that the publisher will take. So they definitely want that kind of ownership over the product.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this we addressed in a thing I called a Peter sheet.
Nice.
Which is essentially, you know, our communication to our agent about what we want. Are we willing to let go of the art direction? Mm-hmm. Are we willing to do this and that? Along with things that you kind of have to think about. Which publishers do you think would be a good fit for your game? If it's a party game, look at a party game publisher. If it's a very detailed tabletop game with lots of figurines, you probably want to go that way.
Yeah.
Take it to one of those Bits and Bobs houses.
Yeah. Yes. Bob's Bits and Bobs. Anyway, so I just did a thing where Peter asked me, list 5 publishers that you think you'd like to pitch to. And so I did a little bit of research, because, you know, as you don't
pay as much attention because it doesn't flash on your screen.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Who the publisher is, it's just a little logo in your corner of looking up similar games and seeing who published them and thinking about pitching there. What else do I have on that sheet? I have potential publishers.
Because I'm selling points.
Selling points.
What the team can offer.
Hasbro, baby.
Yeah, we're gonna try and make that happen.
Yeah.
What the team can offer a writer of must and want.
Yeah. The sell sheet's important. And I don't even know if we've exhausted the topic, but this Peter sheet that Dale is describing is making sure that Peter understands what we want.
Right.
Because Peter is our agent. Mm. And I think it behooves us to take a lot of Peter's advice.
Yeah.
rather than just tell him he's not our mouthpiece.
Yeah.
I think we're better off letting him help craft this message. Mm.
Yep.
But he needs to know where we're coming from and what's important to us, especially because we're not principally board game designers.
Yep. Yeah. And I would say if you don't have a Peter or an agent kind of helping you out, it may be helpful to put together a document like this of your notes.
Yeah.
Just so that you think about, hey, am I willing to give up the art direction for this? And, you know, if nobody wants that, they need to take over it. Is that something you're willing to give up?
Yeah.
Is that something that your team is willing to give up?
Exactly.
Is this a game that's better suited for Kickstarter where you have absolute control over everything?
Yeah.
So I think that it's, for us, has been a really, really helpful in just starting to formulate those concepts and understand what our wants and needs are, as well as being a good place for notes for, you know, where we can tell you, this is why we think it's a great game.
Yeah.
We think it can be used in classrooms. We think expansion decks are going to be a great selling point.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I told you this. I played this with a buddy named Phil, who is a former English teacher. And they died on the end. So, like, I wish I had this when I was teaching, because this would have been an immediate everyday class assignment. All right. All right, everyone. Oh. Here's your writing assignment for the day. Boop, boop, boop. Go.
Oh.
I was like, oh my God, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is good.
I might have to borrow the prototype deck for when I go hang out with my college friends.
There you go. Yeah.
Who are all English teachers.
There you go. Yeah. But that writer is very nice to look at, because it tells me, it does. It just also like gives yourself perfect framework too. Because I think one of the most common objections I get from people who like first time developers is, I don't want anyone to steal my idea.
Yeah,
that is a very common
secrets
thing. But
yeah, ours is on the internet.
Yeah, no, but
also don't steal it.
No.
Oh yeah, that was not an offer.
Yeah, that wasn't permission.
Oh gosh, no, the amount of work that you guys are putting in into this product is the immediate barrier for why someone was like, because like, do you like, oh, like somebody wants to make the next Slay the Spire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Slay the Spire, you can't really like copyright that, those mechanics kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. There are so many games that play have a very similar play cycle. That's very true for board games. You can't really copyright those things,
right?
So if you have an idea and a theme, you showcase it, be prepared for other people to like extrapolate from it.
Yeah,
but don't like expect everyone to sign an NDA to play test your game.
Yeah, right?
That's
well
unruly.
And like yeah, like you're saying, it takes a lot of effort to make. We talk about this on the show all the time.
Yeah,
I would hope listeners at this point you would know video games are hard to make.
Yes.
Board games are hard to make too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And expensive.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I suppose it's not bad to be like cautious about people stealing. I don't think you have to be worried about it as much as like people make it sound like.
Well, I feel also it's if you think it's a risk, then I don't think it is, but for the sake of argument, let's say that you should feel a little bit, maybe your idea is so novel that it's so attractive that you believe that when anyone gets wind of it, they will start the engines on a competitor.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's not the most insane thought in the world. It could happen.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you think that, it is still beneficial to not worry about it, because all of the advantage you get from being able to have access to more playtesters, to get more feedback, to be able to work in the open, like that is something that is, I mean, just we talk about it in video games all the time, the culture of secrecy just actually hurts the production workflow of video games.
Absolutely.
And that's the same in any work that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that like, it's, you know, you're not crazy for thinking that maybe you want to be protective of your idea, but at the same time, there's the trade-off you got to consider, which is just the actual cost to keeping it in a file folder and showing it to nobody.
Right. I know.
You know.
Cost of quality. And also, you know, like maybe one of the people you invite to your board game testing event would just be like, I could make this. But like Stephen was saying, it's hard. And if you've gotten to the point where you're already playtesting it, you're like miles ahead of that other person.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and take it from us, we're making a game that like you can, it is so easy to clone it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
it's conceptually very easy. In fact, I would fully expect people to just write their own cards, mm-hmm. make their own decks.
Yeah.
They hear of the game from their friends and they don't buy a copy. Like that's this kind of game. It's simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that explainable. And we're trying to pitch it to big companies who would be more worried about something that could be that easily cloned.
Right.
And we're not that worried about it.
Yeah.
In the end. You know.
Yeah. One thing I think, and this might be getting a little bit off topic, so rein me back in if we need to. But one of the things
nobody rein Ellen in.
Oh my God.
Sail out to sea.
Well, I'm going to feel real bad if this isn't the hot take that I've set it up to be. I think that with games that are really simple, mm-hmm. There are certain aspects that then are really critically important, right? When you don't have like oodles and oodles of, you know, bits and bobs or mm-hmm. rules that are like esoteric and you have to read four times or have someone do a tutorial night, which, you know, Magic the Gathering is like that for me.
Yeah. me too.
Yeah. Where was I going with this? I don't think you can clone GLOM if you don't have awesome writing skills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and there are other games like that, like Cards Against Humanity, right? Like that voice, the writing voice that comes through on all those cards mm-hmm. is so clear. Even though structurally the game is simple and it might look like, oh, this will be easy to clone, I don't necessarily think it is.
Yeah,
and then also with GLOM, yeah, I think there's a big element of like writing skill and grammar that has to go into like thinking what's going to work. You know,
yeah,
like, you've tried tons and tons of different phrases, Dale, and like you've tossed them away and you've tested them, and it's not something. It's just like looks simple.
It is a little bit. There's a little more to it than it appears. I guess, which is maybe that's our biggest protection against copying.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So,
yeah.
So then you or your agent, now that you've thought about all these things, pitches it to publishers. Where are good places to do that?
Oh my God! So it is.
Yeah, this is the what next part of it.
So you got your. So yes, you got playtesting. You got your pitch worked up together. Your elevator speech. Got your sales sheet and you're ready to make that call. Literally the hardest part is to make that cold call happen and to like reach out to people. Like I tweeted at Check Games Edition and they're like, yeah, are you gonna be at Gen Con? Are you taking pictures? And they're like, yeah, please write to not to throw them under the bus, but like please write to blank at checkgames.com with the fact sheet, all necessary information about the game, and we'll get back to you. That's it. Like that is the first step. Many times, just like sending a resume, like I said before, like sending a resume out into the internet, like this is the same thing.
Yep.
And eventually you'll hook somebody and you get a hook, set up the meeting, be timely, be professional, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in my case, I just got lucky, for lack of a better word.
This is the first success you had?
Yeah. And unfortunately it's not, so like spoilers, there might be some bad things that are going to be coming up for this particular project, but we're going to do it later.
Well, I mean, it's helpful for listeners to know there's ups and downs.
Yeah, there's absolutely ups and downs. But like, I met my friend Danielle at Protospiel. We playtested the game together, and they beat out my friend Johnny, who I consider to be one of like the better board gamers in my group. Mm-hmm. And we had a Protospiel playtesting his game. Gold Molder Games, wherever you're out there, I still want that game. By the way, they kind of like fell silent, but I playtested the game. That game was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But then at that point, I met Danielle again at the Protospiel Mini, and they had brought a prototype they called it Tower Tactics for the time being or something.
Yeah.
And it was basically a dice drop block game on a rotating tower. And your goal was to line up. You get some secret objectives, which is like a color and a number. And you're basically just trying to make patterns and line up coordinates on this rotating tower.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So like Tetris shaped pieces.
No, this was just little singular dice.
Yeah, like, yeah.
These are dice pulled from Sagrada.
But that was the shape.
The shapes you would make were like your classic L piece, the Z, the reverse Z, the S.
What's great about that game is it's physicality.
Yeah.
And even in prototype form, it was a bunch of standard components taped together.
Yeah.
Like, it really sold that physicality. I just imagine what it would look like produced.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
That's a big part of the appeal of that game, I think.
And I think the craziest story is, I was like, yeah, like Daniel just was out there. We play tested it. I got a little bit of buzz. And I'm like, yeah, Daniel, if you need help, I would happily work on this with you. We worked on it for about 3 months with Johnny and Sarah and a few friends, playtesting, getting any feedback, figuring out exactly what you want. And then we actually happened to meet Ben Harkins, who is the owner of Floodgate Games, which is a local publisher here in Minnesota, with their flagship game of Sagrada, which I'm sure you may or may not have heard, but it's basically a dice drafting game. a dice drafting game building stained glass windows based on Sagrada in Barcelona, Spain. Mm. Yeah, so beautiful game.
Cool.
But the funny part was that we were using Sagrada pieces, the dice from Sagrada, as the prototype pieces, which drew Ben there.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
They played it. And later on, down the road, I pitched that game to Ben, and he signed it.
Oh!
Yeah. This was within like 6 months.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I was
I've played that game at playtest events, and that game is good.
Yeah.
Like that has the juice. It's the game after you're done, you want to play it again.
Yes. And so, like, that's how that first signing happened. And then I did a little bit of work for Floodgate for the year, and they took me to events like Gen Con, Origins, PAX Unplugged. These are really big board game conventions, which I recommend you guys, if you're interested in pitching a game, just either A, attend, or B, like, attempt to make these meetings happen at those conventions.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, GDC is like that for video game developers.
Yeah.
They're very different events. Very different.
Yes.
But the meeting structure, is actually quite similar.
Yep.
And they're just basically places a lot of people will be.
Yep.
And so meetings happen there.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So then you go to these conventions, you have a meeting, they look at your game, they say, excellent, I'll sign this right now. Order 10,000 copies.
Whoa.
Rainer in.
Okay. So this is I wish it was that easy. But once they like the game, they take the prototype with them. Then the whole this next legal process comes up. And this is my least favorite part.
Oh, legal process.
It's the worst.
Oh, dear.
I hate bureaucracy.
Well, hold up. Let's talk about meeting. What happens in that pitch meeting?
Oh, that pitch meeting. Oh, well, like generally, you get like 30 minutes to showcase the game. Mm-hmm. And you generally play a few rounds of it.
Okay.
Or like, depending on the length of your game, like if you have like a really heavy 3-hour war game, then you better figure out how to like pitch that in 30 minutes. It's very important.
Yeah. Right.
But if you have
that's not a problem we have, but yeah. I imagine people will have to find a way to use that time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about somebody trying to play Risk. It takes 30 minutes to set up that game.
So depending, like it comes a little bit more targeted depending on like how heavy your game is. So for Tower Tactics, that game was very easy to set up in terms of just you had a dice bag, and you had a little cool model, and you just rotated the model on the thing. That was enough for my pitch. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly how I wanted to pitch it. So I worked on my elevator speech. We sat down, brought out the prototype, said my pleasantries, of course, you know, be a very personal person. But then
that's easy for Peter.
It is. during that meeting, though, you are on. Like, if you were like considering yourself like doing a presentation or an interview, you are on.
Right. Yep.
So showcasing your game, allowing it to be a conversation, of course. Let them ask their questions. Let them poke and pry. And then you play a little bit of it, or you at least can explain the mechanics that you feel are most unique, most noteworthy, what makes a player want to spend money on this game. And you don't have to say that explicitly, but you express it through like your mechanics or maybe a theming or an idea that you think somebody would want out of this game. And then kind of like put it in their idea of like, well, hey, like, this is why this would be a great product for you to make.
Yeah.
And this is where you get a little bit more targeted in terms of your punch.
Yeah, when you're interviewing for a job. This is why I'm perfect for your company.
Exactly.
Right? And then you go to the next company and you're like, this is why I'm perfect for your company.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a good point, which is to say, like, you know, you want to gear your pitch to the publisher,
mm-hmm.
but you also don't want to do that cynically.
Mm.
Right, yeah. You actually do want to pitch publishers that your game is good for.
Yep. Exactly.
And that's why in my list of 5 publishers that I would like Peter to pitch to, I took a look at their games.
Mm.
I took a look, you know, like Asmodee is on there and they make Timeline. And I was like, this is very similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I looked up who published Apples to Apples because I also felt like that was similar.
Rest in peace. Go on.
Etc. So. Yeah, you got to do your research on the company too,
mm-hmm.
and kind of gear it that way. How well it will pair, why they would be good for your game.
Yeah, but if that all goes well and they like the game, you get to the contract stage, and this is where having that writer internally makes you a little bit more prepared for it, because that writer is, or that contract is going to say a lot of things, which is going to be like, are you okay with us having the ownership? If so, you better sign. If not, don't sign it. And if that's something you need to like discuss in that meeting initially, depending on like how it goes, there's a whole flow of conversation post meeting, like emailing back and forth, being like, what are some things that I'm worried about? What are some things I want? And like one of the things that I really wanted when working with Ben was I wanted to be at conventions. I wanted to be out there, like being in the part of the community. And he allowed that. He's like, yeah, we'll sign you on. And whenever we go to a convention set, we'll help take care of you, like compensate your room and your hotel and stuff like that. But you were working for me in that case. Then. Like you're coming, working the booth,
right,
doing events and such and such. And that's what I wanted, though.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And so I put that part of my contract. I was just like, hey, I want these elements. May I? And he was like, sure. And that's something you just
negotiate. Was like, I met you during the pitch meeting. You were very personable.
Yeah.
You'll be great running a booth.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's stuff like you can ask for. And like, don't forget that you have the power to ask. You also have the power to deny.
Right, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like if they want to make sequels and stuff like that. Like I really appreciate that you have it in your writer of just like approval of like future designs or first right of refusal, perhaps, if they want to make a sequel.
Yeah. One of the things I think is important to us for Glom is like it, because it's a concept that is very easily expandable. A publisher is going to have control over that. We want to remain in that conversation because there's ways you could take it in a way that we wouldn't approve.
Yeah.
And in ways that we would strongly disapprove, perhaps. And so that is something that matters to us.
Yeah. And that's very good important. So once I get it to people and they're going to maybe have their own opinions or their old takes, I'm going to let them know. It's like, hey, the team wants this. Like, they really like the name Glom. And if that's like, if you're going to retitle it, you better have a good reason, because if they don't like it, they might walk. And that's going to be hard for like that partnership to happen. But I will like express that when they, if that's something they are concerned about.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to be ready too. Like, if this deal is great, but one of our no-goes they're fighting us on, maybe we compromise.
Yeah.
You know, we have to decide how important. And with more information we get, it's a process.
Yeah, like I'll tell you straight up right now. If Hasbro says they want this game, you change your name to whatever it wants.
I'm just saying. There's the end cap at Target condition or scenario, which will make us very pliable, I imagine.
Right. Exactly. That's the thing. So like, be reasonable in your even your own writer, but like be honest with yourself too.
Yeah.
I know that when I first drafted that, just based on our conversation, and I wanted you all to look at it, you know, some of it was we like this. If they want to, we want approval.
Yeah.
You know, and I divided it up with like, these are our musts, these are our wants, these are our nice to haves. Just to give you a good idea, because I think that's really hard to communicate the importance.
Yeah. I would say like one of the other clients I'm working with, one of their high musts is that the cast and crew that is creating of the characters of Dungeons and Diadria, they want to make sure that it's there's a wonderful a wide cast of characters.
Yeah.
Both representation of gender, sexuality, physical shape, body shape, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a high requirement of them. So any publisher that I end up signing that with is going to have to abide by those. I would hope so. Right. And that's going to be
in their contract. You can word that in the contract.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's that's the thing that they could just ask for. Otherwise, if they break that contract, they get their game back.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about it in video games all the time. It's like there are things you make games for, like things you want to say or things that matter to you. And that's, you want that to survive the contract stage.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So what are we saying with Glom?
I mean, it's an interesting question. Like, what is it that matters to us? What is it about is it just that it's fun and good?
I think that's very important.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important to us that, like, there is a little bit of, like, smart in it.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't know about the rest of everybody exactly, but I'm with Dale on this, that it should work that part of your brain.
Yeah.
I think a lot of party games are about who could be the funniest or even who could be the wittiest.
Yeah.
And I don't think Glom is that, and I like that about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can have those moments, but it's brainy.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's true. It's not Jackbox.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Love Jackbox.
Yeah.
Love
Jackbox.
But it's a different market.
That's one of the things where if a publisher comes in and says, "Oh, I would love to make this wacky." Mm-hmm. I feel like I would be like, "Well, I don't really want to work with you." I mean, maybe we can make that work. Maybe we could figure something out or compromise, or maybe we could be convinced.
A middle ground of what wacky works.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Wacky also, the game is inherently wacky.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to add anything. But it's like
smart.
It.
It's like smart wacky. Yeah, yeah. It's like you have to actually work to, not work, but like work to, you know, develop like the funny. So,
well, for me, I mean, it's like, I think there's the sort of class clown of your board game group.
Ah, yeah.
And I don't want them to win every round of Glum.
Yeah. No, no.
And so, you know, but the rules engender that. So it actually would be hard to change it. So I think that there's, we have things that matter to us, but also maybe we there's probably things we're worried about that will not be, not come up, and things we haven't thought of that will come up and we'll be like, oh, precisely. I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons we have Peter to help us navigate it.
Yeah, you just never know, like, maybe something really mattered to you that you just didn't know later.
Okay, so we're supposed to be recording an extra edition for Patreon after this, right? Yes.
Who says?
I thought we literally said that in the episode.
Ellen, did you hear anything about this?
I think I just said it.
Oh, all right.
Well, now we're in it. Now we're doing it.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's so much content on Patreon nowadays, you know, on our Patreon.
Yeah.
A lot of things.
I say, when we started the Patreon, we made a promise to listeners that there would not be a lot up there.
Yeah, actually, we did say that.
We're like, listen, we're not going to, you can't trust us to add a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
We want your support. We're not going to, but you know what? We put some stuff up there.
We really did. we put in some work, y'all.
We've got more to say.
Yeah.
Oh, it's nice, too, because like you can support us through Patreon. We you know, because the show costs money to run and develop and things. But then you get access to all this fancy stuff we've got. There's like me and Mark learning things from Ellen, as we want to do.
That's pretty much 100% of the content.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. But I mean, it's also us like doing like production stuff in the background, like when we talk about that kind of thing, like our work process.
Yeah.
So like you can hear how the show is made in the Patreon as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub and tune in any amount.
Yeah, and so, you know, we can tell people there's stuff up there.
Yeah.
But we have something special we're recording today that's going to be up there that we can tell them about. What's that all about?
Yes, it's we're going to be doing Trello work. That makes it sound boring.
Okay, we're gonna edit this a little bit. That was a very clumsy bit to that.
Of course.
I'll give it a shot. We're going to be doing Trello work!
Okay, Ellen, explain yourself.
Okay, we're working on Glum together. We're going to work on Glum together, and also Dale is here.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter's here.
Hello.
Still here.
And I'm assuming Dale spun up a Trello board, which, did you?
I did. I populated it with a bunch of activities that we want to do and get ready for pitching. So that includes things like making a video of gameplay to show to publishers. It includes finalizing our sales sheet, getting things in place, lots of stuff. Just kind of wanted to bring you as a Patreon on our journey of getting Glum ready.
Yeah.
So that's the plan. We're gonna organize ourselves, and that's, if you want to kind of get that auditory peek behind the scenes, then jump on Patreon.
Mm-hmm. Nicegames.club. Wait, no, that's not it.
Patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
That's right. Patreon.club. Flash. Nice game stuff.
Did you just say patreon.glum?
I did.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's get to the money part of the contract what we might expect as a publisher, because there is a lot of overhead that the publisher takes on. This is a physical game.
Wait, real quick, listeners, find somewhere to sit down first before we reveal some of these.
Oh yeah, that's right, because there's a huge disparity between how video game and board game publishers contracts. Yeah, so the money side of things is that there is generally a small advancement of depending on the publisher and how big they are. Mm-hmm. But that advancement generally is not more than like $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is a percentage of a profit that the company makes off that product. So somewhere anywhere between as low as 5% and as high as maybe 13%, but the average being about 7 for like a first time publisher or lower depending on who you're working with.
Yeah. So just because listeners may have thought they misheard it.
Yes.
That's about 7% to the developer.
Yes, that is correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, explain why is that not crazy?
Yeah, because as I mentioned earlier, it is $20,000 right now to ship a container from China, which is probably where the manufacturing is happening. And not only are you shipping that container, you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that product made.
Right.
On top of the internal development, including the art assets that they're probably going to be making, rebranding their own team. Like, there is a whole network of people that they're going to have to pay and funnel money to in order to make this physical product.
Yeah. But
their person who calls up Games by James and gets it distributed there.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Those relationships that a video game publisher has to maintain with Valve or Nintendo are different. Now, I do want to make it clear that, like, I think that this is the reality we live in.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that we don't make it clear that we are making this justification. This is what the industry has made this justification.
Yes.
It may well be that developers are severely underpaid. I don't have the knowledge to know if that's true or not.
Yeah, same. I only know things in terms of video game stuff.
Yeah. So, like, I want to make it clear that, like, I don't want anyone to walk away from this episode thinking that, like, that we agree with this.
No.
Just that this is the justification that's been provided. And there is some logic to it. You know, there's maybe details we don't know, but that is why it seems so shocking.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you don't like it, Kickstarter is a option now.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Where it wasn't years before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is another aspect. And we mentioned that before, of like saying that this is a game that could absolutely thrive on Kickstarter. Hmm. But the amount of work that you as a person have to do as a team.
You mean Steven, right?
Yeah. Steven, yes.
Hold on.
The amount of work that Steven has to do to lead a Kickstarter campaign.
We're not doing Kickstarter. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. No.
But if we were.
I'm not. Ellen and I are not doing Kickstarter.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Hold on. But, wait a minute.
But in short, there is actual Kickstarter companies that you can reach out to. And people who are contractable Kickstarter campaign runners. That is a new job. Like, is like, that's a new job role and title.
Yeah.
So listener, if you think that might be the job for you, that's something to look into. Yeah. Because it's like, a brand new job.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the, you know, the Peter of that category, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
Peter of Kickstarter.
Peter, you saw a need and you filled it, and that's what people do, you know, to help manage Kickstarter campaigns.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly valuable because they're really hard to do.
They are. But that percentage, I'm on the side of Mark, and that, like, I don't think it's completely fair, but at the exact same time, the way that once you sign the contract, they take the product and you are done. You've crossed the finish line. That's how a lot of publishers work.
That goes away as towards actually justifying a little bit.
Yeah.
To say that they are more invested in time and money.
Yeah. And it can be different. Every publisher is a little bit different too. Mm-hmm. So there are some people who are like, if you want to continually work on it, continue to develop it, that's something you can ask for. Or that's something that they may ask of you before they even sign the contract. Being like, hey, we want to see this a little bit more developed in this regard, which is an unfortunate, very common thing.
It's spec work, right?
Yeah. They're like, oh, we really like this. We're very interested. We'd love to see XYZ first before we sign it. And that is very much the spec work.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, video game publishers do that too. You'll send a prototype and they'll be like, I'd love to see this when it's further along.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I get it. You want to make a safer bet, I understand.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know.
But that's very true in the board game world too. Mm-hmm. So, like, for specifically Dungeons and Diadria, we are at a crossroads.
Oh yeah,
We pitched it to different publishers, and one of them wants it easy, like simpler, a lot more approachable. Somebody wants it way more complex.
They
want like a campaign,
right? And neither of those are correct, right? They could both result in excellent versions,
exactly,
right? Yeah.
But, have to pick a direction.
Yeah, and that's where like having your wants as a designer, being like, what do you really want for this game to do? What do you want the game to say? you go down the direction that you want. And then you say goodbye to the other publisher who was also interested, but maybe they wanted it a different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a little bit about something that I know matters to video game designers, yeah. which is, you know, we talk about like dev art in a prototype and how that can impact a playtester. And very frequently, video game publishers want something a little bit more polished. Sometimes they will ask for a vertical slice, which is a basically finished version of 5 minutes of your gameplay, which is that's an unreasonable demand for the publisher. But they do sometimes ask for it. Mm-hmm. But my understanding, and you can help clarify this, is that board game publishers don't care as much about that.
I know.
they don't care about if you have a great logo. They don't care if your theme is all together. It's not as important to them, although it can help.
Yes.
It's not like a must have.
Yeah, I would say the amount of games that get pitched and have the same theme to them is generally like it's just like a shotgun. It's completely wild.
Yeah.
You could coin flip it and be like, oh, is this game going to stay on target? Probably not. How many pirate games have you seen in the past past year for board games? So many. Yeah. That's like a reason why. You're like, oh, I made a pirate game. Like, well, no, we're not doing another pirate game because we just made one last year.
Right.
We're going to take this incredible, great drafting mechanic you have, though, and put it to something else. Mm-hmm. See? That's exactly how it would go.
Well, so let me ask you, we made a prototype deck for Glom with some nice art. And, you know, it's a game that is specifically, it's a word game. So it's designed entirely with using words as graphics. And so that's something that I liked to do with it. But that said, with no illusions that it would be the final version necessarily. Yeah. Although in my opinion, it could be.
But it looks good.
But I don't think that's one of our things to say that this is the final or else. But how will that impress a publisher or do they not care?
A little bit. I would say I keep picking on Dungeons and Diadria because that's like my next other
one
than,
in your head right now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, other than Glom, like that's the next one I'm like also really pushing for at like Gen Con.
Yeah.
But that game had incredible aesthetics, and in terms of like its importance to gameplay, to game visual, it was very important for that game to function. Mm. Because basically you're making whole matches of two sides of an element. And if it doesn't match, then you don't gain the bonus for it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But that matching is so important to look visually. But other games like, I don't know, like I can tell you about like Tower Tactics. It was a post-it card cutout that sit inside a plastic container.
Yeah.
And these cards were, and the gold cards were in on the back of like a white sheet on a magic card backing. And that was a prototype. And I was like, boom, we got there. And like that's how variable it can be. And what matters is the gameplay, of course, for all like all games. Like is the mechanics fun? Is it engaging? Will I want to play it again afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what matters more to a publisher than any amount of fancy art.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you
cut that phrase out as a quote and like stick it on a bunch, like a nice Games Club bumper sticker from Peter.
Oh my God.
So I know Peter. A lot of us have play tested some of the games that you've been working with, and one of the techniques I've seen more than once is games that you've tons of stand-in art that you know wouldn't they obviously would be a copyright violation, but they're not being distributed.
Yeah.
But that is a way to get around the fact that you don't want to invest a lot of time in final art.
But it gives you the feeling of the game.
It's game feel.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah. And do you find that can sometimes maybe lock you into something? Or is it there's just so much available that you can really make whatever feel you want? You're not actually limited because Google image search can get you literally anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that's very good to know is that I wouldn't be married to one thing.
Yeah.
In terms of like a fantasy setting for a game could be any type of fantasy. It could be like Star Trek fantasy. It could be World of Warcraft fantasy. Uh-huh. And mechanically, all you'd have to do is change the art, character names, maybe some like, oh, this is your
descriptors.
Yeah, the some descriptors. Yeah, like
blah blah in the fantasy forest.
Exactly. Oh, like instead of the forest, it's at a space pub.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, again, it's something you have to decide how much it matters to you. I think in video games, it's more likely that your narrative and art are part of the holistic experience.
Yeah.
It's less common in board games. But if it is important to you, you probably have to be ready to explain that because a publisher may not understand that's important to you.
Oh my gosh, Peter, thank you so much for coming on to our show.
It's been a pleasure. This has been just a good chat.
Yeah.
And the start of something, which is the best part of it.
Yeah.
listeners, we are going to be going off to do some work on the game.
And the marketing materials.
Yeah. And so we thank Peter for that upcoming work as well.
Yes.
Gosh, I guess there's so much more I wanted to say, but maybe that's left for another episode.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have you back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we get our signed contract, we'll be like, Peter, it's time for him back on. Is that motivation for you?
Yeah, we'll be doing the make it rain and stuff. Yeah,
don't jinx it.
Our $1 bills.
Yeah, our $1 bill. $10. Woo! Well, Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, yeah. I have a Twitter. That's kind of the easiest way to reach out to me. I'm at Zettoviker, which is ZettoViker. And just DM me. If you have a game yourself that you want to play or just want to get like reviewed or maybe want to pitch, just reach out to me. I'm happy to work out with a lot of people. So, yeah.
Cool.
We will put those links in the show notes. That's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics, which were wide-ranging and many, so definitely check out those links. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and on our programming in general. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and Red Burb is laugh, then destroy. Or you can email us through contact@nicegames.club. I'm not going to explain that tweet at all. You have to go look at it.
Yes.
Want to support?
Well, Dale is here. We could ask her.
No.
Nope.
Go on the Twitter.
I already said it.
Okay.
Want to support the show? There are so many ways. Give us a review on your favorite podcast app. Go to Twitter and retweet some of Dale's stuff. Tell your friends about your favorite episodes. Join us on Discord by visiting nicegames.club/discord. And we're on Patreon. As a patron of the show, you'll enjoy bonus content, some of which we're going to record momentarily, extra jokes, and more. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Yeah, so if you don't agree, die mad.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.